Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
May you live in interesting times, goes the expression, and while Everton haven't kicked a ball in anger for over a week and won't again until the 30th of March, things have certainly been interesting. On the pitch, results have continued to go the Blues' way, but off it, the Premier League and the vagaries of its profitability and sustainability rules continue to cause controversy and befuddlement. Today brought the news that Nottingham Forest were found guilty of breaching the permitted threshold for losses by almost £35 million, £15 million more than Everton, but have been deducted just 4 points compared to the Toffees' six. To say that there is confusion and anger in equal measure among Evertonians is an understatement. Hello Blues and welcome to the 100th episode of the Toffee Web Podcast, where we will try and make sense of all this PSR nonsense. Don't hold your breath. Adam's crocked himself in the warm-up, but Andy and Paul are here with me to discuss where Everton are in terms of the relegation battle, sitting as they are on a run of 11 games and counting without a Premier League win. Paul, you confessed to being a bit demoralised by Everton's plight on the last pod, and that was before we went to Old Trafford and lost for the umpteenth time in the Premier League era. The leniency shown to Nottingham Forest won't have improved your mood, so let's start there. What's your reaction to today's news?
Oh, cheers for coming to me first. you know what? I'm just kind of at that point of just like, whatever. You know, like it's just beating me down this now. Everton this season, it's just a constant depression, and I just got so much like about like kind of everything I hear about kind of football at the moment, about Premier League, how I'm not even getting angry about Liverpool doing well and anything like that, you know, albeit they lost the other day, but like it's just nothing sort of seems to, you know, I've just kind of had it. I saw that before and my phone's beeping going mad and I'm just like, okay, I just like, whatever. I kind of semi-expected it somehow, weirdly. I don't know. It just strikes me Everton got 10 points and it was quite widely sort of like, shocking as far as like, you know, the football community seems to feel about that.
Yeah.
And it got reduced to six and you thought, okay. Now Forest have this, this thing. And everyone, as you said, they beached theirs by more. The mitigating factors of which Everton threw it, there seemed a fair amount of validity to a lot of what Everton was saying, from what I could tell. Surely there's lots more valid than Forest signing 40 odd players and for 250 million quid odd, and you know, I mean, being well at hand, not selling their play before the window, like, you know, the time allocated on the 30th of June, like we did with Charleston. You know, so I just don't really buy the reasoning, really. But surely it would just been the easy thing for the Premier League to do, to try and make it look like they sort of, like, you know, oh, we know what we're doing now kind of thing, is give Nottingham Forest 6 points. And then they appear that double down on it. And I was like, no, with 6 points. And, yeah, I mean, just make it sort of look like you've got some kahunas again and sort of something like that. Yeah, because I think that, you know, it's just not, I don't think anybody can look at that from the outside and go, oh, that's fair. That's right. They, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody understands. And just making a mock of it. And if Everton or Nottingham Forest go down now with an asterisk again, it's just going to be, you know, it'll end up being farcical, really. You know, I mean, if it's down because of a points deduction, when there's just so much inconsistency with it, and it's all of their own making. You know, yeah, just and it's just another reason I just kind of like throw my arms in the air and just go, oh, whatever. You know, like I've just got, a few Everton wins will get me, cheer me up again, I'm sure. But right now, I'm just kind of like, so lost of it all, really. So I can't give you much more enthusiasm, I'm afraid, at the moment.
It's funny, because I felt like that for the past month, I'd say. You know, that kind of, oh, you know, how much am I actually going to allow myself to get stressed out about all this? But today seems to have it seems to have completely lit the flame again for me, and not in terms of necessarily the Everton flame as such, but just the, I was absolutely seething earlier. When I first read it, I thought, oh, okay, someone else has got a deduction. That makes the bottom of the table look quite interesting. But the more I read about it, and I can only take the screenshots that I've seen on social media of the commission's report as read. I'm sure they are. I haven't had a chance to look through it all myself. But of the screenshots I've seen, when they're trying to kind of cross-reference the Everton case, it makes no sense whatsoever that one commission has no idea how the other commission got to what they got. There is, it seems, no starting point anyway. And yet, so now we have two clubs, not one, we have two clubs that have been punished in a sporting sense, but nobody has any idea how either commission got there. And we now know that the commissions don't speak to each other or cross-reference either. So how on earth can that be an outcome? How on earth can this be in any way understandable, but also how can that be fair? It's not fair. And if it was the case that, okay, we happened to be the unlucky first one, that they didn't really know what they were doing. They ended up at 10 somehow. Then they ended up at 6 somehow. But from the 6, they went, okay, let me just go back to square one. This is how we got to 6, right? Mm. And everybody went, okay, well, we're not happy, but I can see how you got to 6. And therefore, this is how we got to Forest's 7. Or this is how we got to Forest's 6. But for Forest to have 4? It makes no sense. It's numbers out of a tombola. Earlier I'm glad I've settled. This is me settled down, by the way. This is me having had a few hours to really think about my conduct. I was walking the dogs earlier and it was kind of picking up on my phone, and I was reading bits and bobs as I was walking along, and I actually thought to myself, I would 100% stand by Everton Football Club, whoever that is at the moment, because we don't really know who's running the club, but let's say someone is. I would 100% stand by that person if they said, in light of this farcical situation, we are not playing another Premier League game this season. We are pulling out of this thing. because it makes no sporting sense whatsoever. We do not want to be part of an organisation that runs the show like this, because at very best, it's random. At very worst, there's something quite sinister going on here. Now, I don't know whether I'm quite still at those levels, but I would have quite happily stood by the club if it had made some kind of huge statement like that, because it's getting to the point where I'm thinking, do we actually want to be part of this thing? And I know that has wide ranging consequences, us saying something like that. And of course we want to be part of top tier football, because that's where Everton belong and that's where we should be. But I don't know. I really don't know whether I want us to be part of something that's run like this. Football is just, it is selling, it's flushing itself down the toilet.
Yeah, very well put. If there was any sense that Everton would have any supporters backing them up on such a stance, then I'd be like, yeah, but the Premier League would probably just say, yeah, okay, see ya. You know, we'll just bring up an extra team next season if that's the way you want to be. I mean, mockery is the word. And the fact that there was no sanctions framework to begin with, they kind of made one up on the hoof just before, you know, our first commission started. They wanted to hit us for 12. The independent commission hit us for 10. The appeal board said, well, no, that was over the top. We're going to throw your methodology out the window and start again. And it ended up with 6. Like you, Andy, and I think many of us thought, there's your benchmark. So a breach is a breach is a breach. 6 points. There's your benchmark. And if it's a serious breach, then that should be the absolute floor. And I think most people would agree that a £35 million breach, even accounting for the fact that, you know, it was just in the one season and they haven't sort of had the benefit of being in the Premier League for longer, and part of their period was in the Championship. You know, all that's kind of by the by, because it still constitutes a breach, and a serious one at that. So for me, it should be, we'll start at 6 points and we won't go any higher if there are mitigating factors. Mitigating factors should not be bringing the points total down, particularly if it's less than Everton. You know, and the mitigating factor that won out, it wasn't holding off on selling Brennan Johnson and pocketing an extra however much it was, 17 million quid or whatever, to be closer to compliance. The mitigating factor was that they fronted up to it and cooperated. Well, yes. I mean, everyone sat there wondering how you were buying a player on an almost daily basis. Everyone knew you were going to be in violation. So owning up to something that was just plainly obvious shouldn't really be a mitigating factor, because we would have been stunned if you hadn't been over the limit, you know? So, you know, and I've had lots of people on my Twitter feed today saying, well, you know, you broke the rules and your breach and Everton's breach was just as obvious and egregious. Well, it plainly wasn't, if we had all these mitigating factors that, you know, the club clearly thought that they could use and massage to sort of get us under the rope, if you will. They clearly didn't, because every single one of those was shot down. Some of them had more validity than others, I think, you know. But as I made a point on a previous podcast, it wasn't so much that you could sort of shoot or put a hole in every one of those mitigating factors. It's the fact that we had, in aggregate, we had all these kind of grey areas that the Premier League could have fallen either side of, and the first commission chose to fall, you know, to choose against us on each one of them. So I think that it just exposes. It exposes as a sham the whole process. And when you are deciding the fate of clubs and potentially the actual existence of a club, because if Everton get relegated, we are already, you know, the Wolves are already at the door, regardless of any huge financial hit we'd get from going down. So it's, you know, these aren't trifling matters. You know, and 1 point, 2 points can make a massive difference. So I find some of it, I just find it stunning, actually, that as you said, Andy, there's no, you know, the process is set up in such a way that they aren't communicating with each other because they're supposed to be independent of each other. But all that means is you get three different opinions on how the process should be run, and who knows what our second commission will throw up, because it's going to be three different people who are going to approach it in a completely different way. There's no guarantees that they will look at the people who did the Forest decision and say, okay, well then 3 points is now the benchmark, and we'll go up and down from there. So who knows?
Yeah, it's crackers, isn't it? And they're all independent, as you say, and it's three different people every time. But these guys haven't been living in some sort of safe house for the last sort of 3 months, and are totally oblivious to what Everton have had. I'm like, yeah, it's not like they go, there they go. I wonder what actually the bench are like. Okay, well, I think 4 points is about right. They know damn well that everyone's going to go, Anga, what the fuck is going on here? Bother me. It's just ridiculous. So I just can't understand. They've got a chance to appeal this too. They couldn't have getting less than that. And it's just absolutely, this is why I'm just come to the point. I'm just I don't care. That's obviously not true. But you really sort of have to at some point, I just don't even know how, I think Andy was saying the other day, the other week, I don't know how much more emotional side of me I can give towards this anymore. And then, I've just hit that point this last week or so. I'm just so beaten down by it. Everton's form, not winning any games, everything, and just to the point. And then something like this, is that the one that's just tipped me over the edge? I've had enough. I don't know, but I find it really, really, really difficult to take. I mean, can we look at it somewhat positively? Can this galvanise the players? I mean, it's sort of maybe didn't quite think so at the time, because we'd hit a little bit of form before the 10-point deduction, but obviously the four wins that came, we lost the Man United game, and then there was a four wins on the road after that, and the win against Burnley in the Cup with the V5. It was really positive. It seemed to really sort of galvanise the players a bit, so maybe that can be that extra little push to go right, it really is us against the world here, boys. Come on, let's really sort of dig in, and that's my little bit of positivity I can give it. So maybe it'll just give that players the extra little bit to sort of go sod this, let's just take this into our hands and just win some bloody games and get this done, because it's the fans deserve it now. I deserve it now. I'm going mad here. So I just hope that can sort itself out, because we're not getting any help off the field, clearly.
The way you've described it there is perfect. I mean, for the last 3 years, this has been a real trauma, hasn't it? This, for the last 3 years, supporting Everton Football Club, I don't know whether I'd go as far as to say it's affected my mental health. I don't know whether that's maybe for me, not quite the right phrase, but I'm sure for many Blues it has. But I know for me personally, at times Everton and all of the problems and the stress and the anxiety of not being in the Premier League or not being in the top flight, and it has definitely affected me. And there's just no sign of it finishing at the moment. So I completely get where you're coming from in terms of, and I felt it too over the last month. I've got to look. I've got to kind of look after myself a bit here and just try and take one step back from this sorry show. But today, I don't know. Today has probably sent me stepping back in, which is a bit strange to think of it like that. It's so Everton. It's so ridiculously Everton that since we last kicked the ball, our position in the league is really, really improved. I mean, we've been in the last 2 weeks when we haven't played, we've been excellent. I look at the league table now. We've got a game in hand in Forest on Forest and Luton. We're four clear of Forest and we're three clear of Luton with a better goal difference. It doesn't look actually when the dust settles and you look around in the rubble, you think actually, yes, it might get whittled down again, maybe for Forest thing, but it does actually look much better after 28 games for us, 29 for everybody else, than I thought it probably would since the United game. After the United game, I thought, well, we could quite easily, quite conceivably, play our next game in the relegation zone. And, well, we're further clear than we were when we last lost. So, I mean, oh, God, it's like a social experiment, isn't it? Mm-hmm. How long can this set of people actually put up with this? But in raw figures, I suppose the one positive I'm going to throw at it tonight is that doesn't look too bad. I'm glancing at the table now, especially if we got something at Bournemouth. Maybe if we were to get one or two points taken off us again, I don't know, maybe nothing, but we might still be all right, you know, which is the strangest thing of it all.
I was going to introduce the same sort of very tentative positivity that you just have, just for the fact that, you know, as I said, Luton have only picked up a point while we've been off. Forest have picked up a point. Brentford have picked up none. And that's kept them all down there with us. It's the big if of can we pick up enough points. But if you look at it in terms of just, you know, the previous conversation regarding point, it's highly unlikely that Forest will get all of them back. Let's say they get two. I don't actually think they'll get any back. I think if I were Forest, I would cut to take the win and run.
That's
I wouldn't
point,
even
actually.
Appeal. Just,
sorry to interrupt. Can they get more? Can they get more points on the appeal? Yeah, would that be possible?
It's possible because the appeal board could. Yeah, the appeal board could look at it and say, "Well, I don't think that you've used the correct benchmark. I think you should go back to Everton's appeal benchmark, which is 6 points, and then go from there." So they could, I mean, they could conceivably, because they can't introduce any new evidence. It's literally just three new people looking at the same stuff and making a decision. And as we've seen, there's no way to tell how they're going to interpret it. So,
they might be wise to walk away from that. I mean, like that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, so, and let's say that our second commission, which I thought had sat last week, but then I saw a report saying they were going to wait for the Forest verdict before ours sit. So that means our commission will sit this week. And let's say for argument's sake, with no grounds for faith whatsoever, that they will look at the Forest decision and say, okay, well, now 3 points is the benchmark, in which case, you know, it's unlikely that we've breached to seriously again. If we've breached at all, let's hope that it's only a little bit. And, you know, they take into all the mitigating factors and the double jeopardy and all the rest of it. And so let's say we get two or three. That still puts us in a decent position. Say Forest get two back, we get three off. You know, we're on 22, Forest on 23. With the home games that we have ahead of us against all those teams, you know, Forest, Brentford, Burnley, Sheffield United. I mean, I know this is the big if. Our home form is terrible, particularly when we go into a game thinking we should win it. I mean, it's about the worst position we can be in these days, is going into a game thinking that we should win it. Maybe the fact that we're playing Luton away is a good thing, you know, because we're better away from home. I think that, you know, the key will be when we go to Bournemouth. If we can get something down there, then I think all of a sudden, if we can win down there, I think all of a sudden the picture changes. Then I think we might be able to go on a bit of a run, because we'll certainly do one. We'll certainly do a run.
Do a win. That would be a start, wouldn't it?
It would.
Yeah, I mean, there could be opportunities there at Bournemouth. I've just got their kind of form up at the moment, and yeah, okay, they beat Luton 4-3. They drew 2-2 with Sheffield United, and they were two down, I think, of that game. Certainly losing the game. They beat Burnley 2-0, but then yeah, they conceded a lot of goals, is the thing, Bournemouth. So that, I'd just like to, you know, I'd like to think that we could get, you know, opportunities in that game, as we've been doing, like creating opportunities in games, and just putting one away. I might just need one. Yeah, you know what I mean, we could quash this quite quickly. We could, if we could beat Bournemouth, nick a point at Newcastle, then beat Burnley at home, them 7 points would be golden, and you'd all of a sudden probably see quite a distance between us, and I'm not too sure what their fixtures are down there, but just the way form has been for the teams, you know, we'd...
Well, just on that, I think Luton have got to play Arsenal, Spurs and City away in their next three of their next four games.
Well, there you go. I mean, so that's a bit, yeah. So, you know, very unlikely to get more than 2 points in them games. Mm-hmm. Likely they'll get none. You know what I mean? It's quite feasible. If you can get 7 points or so in that time, then that's a huge, given that, what are we already, 4 points above them, something like that. So it's a huge gap there. And that's, you'd think, even with a couple of points offers or whatever, in pretty good hands then. So that's just got to go and do the business now. I think they will. I don't really necessarily do it in them games, but I think the wins will come, because it's just unfeasible that you can. It's not like we've been playing absolutely crap. You know what I mean? We haven't been brilliant, but we've created enough opportunities in games, defended pretty well on the lot, on the main, bought a few blips in the last couple of games. Hopefully the break's done them good, and they can, you know, just get these wins done. Because, you know, we've just got to draw that big fat line under the season, haven't we? And hope for the best in the summer with a takeover and all that sort of stuff. But the players have to do it. We just got to get over that line in a few games now. And if we can do that quickly in the next three or four games, then it'll make a huge, huge, huge difference. And it'll make the rest of the season much, much simpler, I imagine. And surely that would just break the spirit of Luton and co. down there, because it'd just be far too insurmountable to catch us, at least. For us, Brentford, maybe. But by that point, if we can just drag ourselves clear in a few games, you know, in three or four games. And they're presentable enough games. You know, even the away, Newcastle, it's never easy going there midweek, but not a huge amount to play for now, really. Newcastle still have a bit of a chase for Europe, I suppose, but they look a bit flat, don't they? They look a bit befuddled, you know, so chance to beat them. Bournemouth conceding a lot of goals, not in good form. Burnley at home, you've got to think you can win, you know, so there's chances there, surely, to pick up points, and they've just got to go and do it. And I just think the luck's got to change in one of them, in one game soon, you know what I mean, where we get like a lucky win or a lucky goal or scrap it a little bit. Something's got to give at some point, so I'm confident that might happen in the next few games, that we can just pull away a little bit and just get me feeling better again.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Luton have got the games they have coming up, and the fact that they've had the week they've had, I was very worried about Luton when they got the last minute equaliser at Palace.
Me too, yeah.
That was the one. That was the, if any goal recently, apart from the Lewis Dunk one against us directly in our game, but if any goal in any other game really worried me and really got to me, it was that. And I know it's only 1 point. It's not as if they stole a win, which would have been huge, but they just kept coming back. And I wonder whether that, the Bournemouth thing, I don't know, it has all the hallmarks of being a real sliding doors moment, that Bournemouth game for Luton, because when they were 3-0 up at half time, I mean, you know, they were catching us on goal difference, let alone on, you know, points. And it was all of a sudden, I was, you know, we were talking about it on the group, weren't we? I mean, that was an active night on the Toffee Web group because we were all petrified. And it was, you know, it was the fact that, yes, but they can score a goal. They can always score goals, Luton. And every now and again, that will win you a game. You know, where we're the other end of the scale in that, yes, we can keep a clean sheet every... Well, we used to be able to keep a clean sheet.
Yes, I say.
But we know we've been defending well, but that doesn't necessarily win you games. It keeps you in games and it gets you points and it keeps the scoreboard ticking over. But with Luton, and I suppose with Forest, in a sense, they've got players that can create something and out of nothing, and they've got systems that allow them to score goals. And I was a bit concerned in the last 10 games, if Luton happened to go and outscore a team three or four times, then we might really struggle to match that. But I wonder whether the last week may have just... it may have put a seed of doubt in their mind, because I think their spirit's been great. And in any other season, I'd be thinking, wow, I really hope Luton stay up, because they've been great to watch and they've given it a real go. I can't feel bad about them this season. But yeah, it's up to us now. It is up to us now. Regardless of what's going on, regardless of how many points we get taken off us again, because I don't think it'll ever be six again. It looks like it won't even be four now, because if Forest can do that and get away with four, it's likely to be three and downwards, I would say, if any. And it's up to us now. It's up to Everton now to just get points in football matches. It's a pretty fundamental skill, that. But I do think it's reached the point where if we go and win three games, it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Let's hope that Dyche slapping them about a bit is going to help, and we can get back into winning ways.
Slapping them about. Poor Nathan. I was going to say something about Luton. Oh, yes. They've got Adebayo out possibly till the end of the season now. So that's going to be huge. And I think I agree with you. I think that this last week might have broken some of their belief that they can do it. Watching Forest, you're right. They have lots of players who can create things. But thankfully, they haven't actually been doing it much. And they've got a bit of a fragility about them. Any sort of new manager bounce that they had from Nuno didn't really materialize. So I agree. It's completely in our hands. We have more than enough points on the table there, more than enough winnable games. I mean, draw them all and probably be all right.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think, I'm writing off, Arsenal away. I should probably write off the derby, but there's enough there for us in the rest of the matches to eke out enough points that, as you say, Andy, no matter how many we get taken off, and obviously we can't have 10 taken off again, but that we should be fine. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I think both Forest and Luton would swap positions with us any day, wouldn't they?
Oh, 100%.
Given the opportunity. Just going to quote a bit of Sean Dyche of Nottingham Forest, forgotten how to win. There's certainly a lot of games, and they've been tight games. I think a lot of them, they're like getting battered, but they must have that demoralising factor, especially well, in a weird way, they lost 4 points when perhaps they were expecting to have lost more. So it might not be as much of a kicker that result today as it might have been for them, but. Getting once they cross that white line on the pitch, it does seem tough for them, but they just can't. I mean, they really bottled it against Luton. I thought on Saturday they had the game in the hand there and just really gave a really really sloppy goal away at the end there against Luton Town. They should have got over the line in that one. And it's just been from the games I've seen them with Caden Feeney and looking at some of the other defeats, they lost 1-0 at Brighton, lost to Liverpool at home, and they'll be devastated with that one because of what happened at the end of the game, and missed a ton of chances, didn't they, in that one, and just looking through all the fixtures, all those quite tight games, which they've, they beat West Ham, but other than that, it's just been really, just even the Newcastle one, and they lost 3-2 at home, and it's just a lot of stuff's gone against them, so, not saying like bad decisions as such, I don't really know, but just moments in games, and I'm not so sure they're really in a particularly good place. So let's hope that this trip away has done them has worked, that it's done got a bit of bonding and or fighting or whatnot, and warm weather training, hopefully a bit of time away, and players on international duty go away and come back unscathed, and a bit more time at Finch Park now to really sort of work on all the things they got to work on. And I think that in a way it'd be great if, like, given the close proximity of the games when we come back, imagine Everton could go bang bang with two wins, it's a tall order way of Bournemouth and at Newcastle, but imagine they could, that would just be a hell of a boost, and you could always do our terrible home form might even be a little academic if we draw with Burnley then at home or something like that, so yeah, the opportunity is there. I just hope they can seize it quickly. Worst thing, imagine me, just scramble 1 point out of the two games or something like that, and then the Burnley game's a lot of pressure on it, and all of a sudden, it can be tricky. So if they can just get this done quickly, that'll be marvellous. It really, really would.
Just going through Luton and Forest's current form, and we've got ourselves down with our current run of games. Luton have won one Premier League game in 11. I make it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, 10, sorry. 1 in 10. Forest have won 1 in 9. Luton have got Spurs away, Arsenal away as their next two fixtures. Forest have actually got Palace and Fulham at home as their next two. But the Luton thing, I mean, we all see Luton, I think, as a kind of almost a form team in a way, but they're not. I think we just need to remember that. You know, yes, they had they beat Brighton 4-0, which is their only Premier League win since Boxing Day.
Yeah, and they should have won at Newcastle, probably should have won at Bournemouth. So they're struggling to get the job done, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. And Boxing Day was Sheffield United, you know.
Right.
So, you know, it's not quite as, you know, not quite as rosy for everybody else as it might seem from the outside sometimes, because we're not doing well. You always think, oh, God, Luton have got a goal in them. Oh, dear, you know, Forest, this, that, the other. They're not actually that good. And, you know, I know Forest have got two maybe favourable games next, or two games that they would expect to get stuff out of. But looking at the Luton form particularly, and the Luton fixtures particularly, I think, yeah, like I said just a minute ago, you know, the next fortnight is the time. If we pick up, I think any points we pick up in the next, I'm going to say three, I think any points we pick up will be bonus points over Luton, to be honest. And that makes it very, very important.
It's like the old adage when you're outrunning a bear, isn't it? You only have to outrun the one person behind you. So in that case, we only have to outrun one of them. And hopefully Luton are the one who are maimed, get caught by the bear. The Manchester United game is probably far enough in the rearview mirror that we don't have to cover it too much. But I, in the aftermath, have just been trying to think of ways that I think Dyche can and should try and change things. And I think, well, I hope that with a three-week break, Odrisagay will be ready to come back. Arnaut Danjuma might be close to fitness. Andre Gomez might be able to contribute a bit more. I'm not counting on him being a starter. I'm not necessarily sure that he even should be. But he's potentially someone who could come off the bench and provide something. So I'm looking at... And really, because, I mean, it's 11 games without a win now. One more and he's in Mike Walker territory, which is 12 without a win, which is the Premier League record. you don't want to be in Mike Walker territory.
Premier League record,
sure.
Of Everton's Premier League record.
The Premier League record. Yeah, since the inception of the Premier League, remember Mike Walker went 12 games without a win and then won one and then got sacked. Dyche is 11 right now. He'll tie it if we don't win at Bournemouth.
But that's the league record. Was that Everton's? Is that the actual, the worst record in the entire history?
No, that's Everton's. Everton's. Sorry, yes, okay, clarification. Okay, that's right. Everton's record in the Premier League, yeah. So I think really all options should be on the table. So I'm looking at things like changing right back, because I don't think Ben Godfrey is working. I mean, for all the attributes that he brings, I don't think he brings enough to warrant not having a natural right back in that, or someone more adept at right back. So if it's putting, there's been talk from the View from the Bulletins chap that Seamus Coleman physically just can't play week to week now, which, you know, given his age and the number of miles on the clock, that may be right. I haven't seen enough of what people are saying that Nathan Patterson can't do it. I prefer to see him give another go at some point. At least bring him off the bench from time to time now. Just give the lad a run out, because he's got a couple of really good assists. The one against Newcastle, the one at Sheffield United. You know, going forward, I think he's an asset. Maybe his lack of covering and his backtracking and his defensively, there may be question marks there. But if that's the case, then try James Garner out there once Odrisagay's back, because I think we have enough central midfield options that we can actually start experimenting a bit there. I don't think James Garner is creating enough from an attacking standpoint to make him an automatic choice anymore. So start changing them, put him on the right. So I just think that we need to start experimenting. if the wins aren't going to come?
Definitely a right back. I remember I was at Man United, and obviously when he made the triple substitution, I was thinking, because obviously it you can make, so is it five players you can sub, is it all, but you got to do it all, in no more than three
windows,
goes, is it, or something.
Three windows.
Yeah. So I was thinking, like, well, surely at some point, the way Ben Goffey's playing, or how little he's contributing in an attacking sense, if we're going to have a real go at this and have a crack, we might as well just get Patterson on now, because I'm thinking he's going to put him on eventually anyway. Because surely we've got to try something else from right back, because every time it's coming to Goffey, he's making the wrong decision, or putting in, or the quality of ball in isn't good enough. You know what I mean? Or, you know, he's hitting his first man, or he's cutting back, or he had a bad game, didn't he? You know, like, I don't know if it was you saw that on TV, but that was just going to be a double sub, and then Harrison did something stupid, and he just immediately said, "Right, Dobbin, you're on." You know what I mean? And I thought, like, why is Ben Godfrey not afforded? Why isn't he afforded the same treatment? Because there's multiple times I thought, like, oh, I've seen enough of Godfrey in this game to say, I'm not just trying to load up on one player, by the way, but I've seen enough in one game. And sometimes you see when a player is having a bad day, it doesn't really get any better generally, does it? You know, especially from that sort of position. So I thought, why not make that a quadruple change then? Because then you can still use other subs later, if you know what I mean. Because you're going to need to do it. You need to change that player. And I thought, why not? We're already two down. Why not give Patterson a go? You know what I mean? Why not? You know, try something more attacking. It just seemed like a really real opportunity to get him on there. I don't know why he didn't. I'd have Ashley Young there over Ben Godfrey myself, if he wants to sort of, if he doesn't want to go with Patterson, if he's got question marks over him, I'd have Ashley Young there over Ben Godfrey. It's not your most ideal solution, but it's somebody who can knit together, who's got at least positional sense and good nous on the ball, and he'll support the attack more and knit things together a little bit better. He's not going to rampage down the line, but he's sensible. You know what I mean? Whereas Ben Godfrey isn't really sensible when it comes to sort of attacking decision making. He's a good athlete. He'll give his best and all that. But I don't know. We've never thought at any stage it's always been a quandary, hasn't it? What's Ben Godfrey's best position? And still nobody really knows. I think we like to say, like, inside of a three in a centre back pair in a back three. But you know, I think people even have him at left back over right back. Is what we've said the whole time. So he did quite well in a couple of games. Was it at Tottenham, I think, when he was in? I think Fulham away did quite well. There was a couple of matches there. I thought, okay, but it only ever had to be a stopgap thing. And why it's gone so long with Ben Godfrey in that position, I don't know. But the Man United game was particularly perplexed as to why he stayed on the pitch for so long. And I hope, it'd be sad if Seamus can't. Yeah, we could do with a fit Seamus now, couldn't we, in that position? Yeah. But just for leadership, nothing. It's a shame if he can't contribute many games anymore. But if you're looking for sort of leadership in that, then I'd certainly be going to Ashley Young if you really don't want to give Patterson the game. Might not be a popular decision, but I'd be putting Young in over Godfrey.
I've just been writing down the team. Didn't take long. I mean, Pickford's in goal, Tarkowski and Branthwaite centre halves, Mikalenko left back. Although you've got similar problems to what we've already said about Godfrey, about the spaces he occupies, but he is a specialist left back. I'd like to see Garner, Gay and Onana in midfield. I think Decore is the one in front of them that just seems to make sense. It's just what he does. I mean, right back, yes, is what he does there. I would like to see, I think Calvert-Lewin will come back into the team. I don't think Beto will be given another start. It's just what he does wide. And I just like to see that is possibly where it's been the most structured, isn't it? In terms of the most he expects from a certain player on the pitch, or players on the pitch are our wide men, and the amount of work they have to do to fit into our system. I just think that might be the thing he can and might have to change in order for us to make more opportunities. We might, you know, to use an old school term, we might have to cheat a little bit more in wide areas where, you know, we're all nicely back in position and we're all defending well, but then it takes it away from the attacking you know, the attacking thrust when we get the ball. And I'd like to see either Dobbin or Danjuma start in either of those positions, if not both of them. I don't know whether both of them might be a bit much all at once away from home, and I don't think he'd do that. But I think one of Dobbin or Danjuma could easily start in the next game. He'll probably keep McNeil on the left, so it would have to be on the right. I know Danjuma gets a bit lost on the right, but maybe put Dobbin in. I just think he has to change something. We're at the stage now where, yes, we've had some good results earlier in the season, but recently it's been doing the same thing and expecting different results, expecting different things to happen. Mm. And it's just got so predictable, and it's got, we bemoan people not taking chances or not making the right decisions. Well, maybe it's about time we change the people. Dobbin has pace, which we don't have in the team. Danjuma has a creativity we don't have in the team. So, if he wants to keep either Harrison or McNeil down the left, which he'll probably keep McNeil, I think he's just got to change who's playing on the right. And that might mean a bit of a risk. That might mean saying to Danjuma, maybe, look, I want you to do this today. Or just saying to Dobbin, play on the fullback and take him on, get him in behind. You know, something's got to change. Something's got to change. Otherwise, we're going to be looking to draw our way out of this. And I don't think that's going to be a very easy watch.
No, it's not. It's a recipe for more stress and and potential heart attacks. Yeah, I think putting both Dobbin and Danjuma on in the same team, I think, would be a bit of a risk. And I would bet my life that Deitch wouldn't do it. You know, I just think my concern with the Godfrey situation is that the fact that he's not coming off when it's clear that we should probably change it is he's becoming another one of these favourites or these blind spots. I'm hoping it doesn't become a blind spot for Deitch, because, again, the rationale for having him is he's a bit like Moyes used to do. It's an extra centre half, but he has been responsible for 3 goals now because his lack of height against Brighton. The same thing against the last one we conceded against West Ham. Yeah, against West Ham. And obviously the penalty at United, which was just clumsy. And as you pointed out, Paul, just his lack of output in an attacking sense was a real liability. You've got to have someone. If you're going to win games, and we have got these matches now that we've highlighted as games that we should be able to win, and you've got to be on the front foot more. And I think someone like, obviously Ashley Young would give you more of that. Patterson would give you more of that, even if you play him as a right winger as opposed to a fullback. But I think if you compare the work rate of James Garner and Harrison, I think they're fairly equal. I think obviously Harrison's got a bit more pace, but Garner's probably got a bit more consistency about him. So I would start to look to put Garner on the right. Keep McNeil on the left. I'm hoping that this 3-week break is going to really benefit Dwight McNeil. I thought he was probably our best outfield player against United, where he was fairly poor the week before. The week before, Doucouré was our best player, but he was poor at United. So we just need some consistency now from week to week from some of these players. And I think, as we've said a few times on this pod today, a win or two, and I think all of a sudden the picture really changes. And under Deitch, we've kind of gone on these little mini runs where everything's looked great, and everyone's like, "Oh, Everton will be fine. They'll be fine." And then we lose 4 or 5 on the bounce, and then we're back in the crap. So it only needs one more of those little mini streaks, and I think we'll be fine. And hopefully that comes in the next month, so we can just relax.
Yeah, it's a place we're definitely due a win, Bournemouth. When did we last win at Bournemouth? I don't know. Have we ever won at Bournemouth in the Premier League? I remember beating them in the Cup once. I'm not sure we've ever beat them in the Premier League at Bournemouth.
That's a good question. Keep talking, I'll have a look.
Okay, good. What do we talk about? I agree with Garner on the right once Trezeguet's back. Just because I think it just gives you more balance. Do you think that ball he put in for Beto's shoulder against West Ham? Up front a bit of, and yeah, I doubt it. Again, do we see Pat? I'd just love to see something else at right back. And either of them, any three of them, if Coleman's fit. Even Garner, as you say, I would be too uncomfortable with there. And maybe Harrison's a bit better after 3 weeks' break as well. He looks knackered. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. I think we see there's a better player there than what we've seen for the last month or so. But yeah, it's what happens up front as well. Does Dominic come back in? Or I've never been an advocate of Beto from what I've seen of him. How, having said that, I thought he did okay against Man United. He didn't really have any chances really in the game. I thought he surprised me. I thought he was a bit better than I thought he was against Man United. Yeah. You know, so
his all round game seems to be improving. Just his hold up play, and I think that just will come from games. He hasn't actually played that many minutes when you look at it. So I think I was kind of encouraged by that because you know, my biggest criticism of him has just been how clumsy he is, and he looked better. I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, a couple of games ago, literally even a game ago, I just said, "No, no way, I don't want him in the team." But I haven't seen that firsthand there at Old Trafford. I thought he did okay, actually. I don't think Dominic the two, but either. It's good that they're quite slightly different strikers, albeit neither of them are scoring goals as such. There's just different attributes to them, so. I just like to go a bit more horses for courses sometimes, you know, and just like, it just feels like there's your 11, that's it. I just like to sometimes think like, I don't know, this game might suit Dan Juma, let's give him a game, for example. You know what I mean? It just doesn't really seem to happen with Dice. You just like, no, them 11 are going to play every last minute until they possibly, you know, what they possibly can. So, a bit of adaptability would be good. The squad ain't big, but let's utilise what we got, and when you're not winning games, you've got to do that a bit more, you know, and it just doesn't really seem to be the case, and especially stuff like Godfrey at right back. So let's hope this 3 weeks or so it's given a chance to have a bit of a fresh look at everybody and see if everyone's pulling up after training and stuff, and maybe a chance to talk to the players a bit as well. And I don't know, dust settles a little bit, speak openly with them about these things, and I'm sure he's on top of all them things. So yeah, let's hope they can just find a winning solution next couple of games.
Yeah, I said on the Blue Room podcast, I would get them back to Goodison Park and I would have them just run attacking drills over and over and over again within the confines of an actual stadium. Obviously, there won't be fans there, but just, and as I said, just kind of beat some muscle memory into them. Just get them used to scoring goals, you know, put our defense at one end, the attack, and just have them attack. You know, run transition drills over and over again so that you can have some confidence that if we get into a counter-attacking situation, you know, of the kind that United beat Liverpool with yesterday, you know, that our players, when we get into those situations, it invariably ends up just in calamity. That kind of confidence, that kind of ability to execute in those kinds of situations, because as we saw against Brighton last year, the team is set up to do that, but it's just lost its confidence and its ability to execute.
I was going to say, if I go through the last 10 fixtures, how many points are we getting from these fixtures? Because now it's 10. It's a nice round figure, isn't it? Bournemouth away.
We've never won in the Premier League, just to round that one off.
Okay, so that's got to change.
Yeah.
Newcastle away, Burnley home, Chelsea away, Forest home, Brentford home. There's probably going to be a Liverpool home around that area of the season as well. Luton away, Sheffield United home, Arsenal away.
Well, it's just like I've put 3-1-0 for like, it's like really very symmetrical the way I'm sort of hitting this.
As long as you've got some threes in there, that sounds good.
I've got four threes.
Oh wow! Well, that's all we need, honestly. Four wins would surely do it.
And three draws.
Yeah.
Ooh,
climbing.
Yeah,
wow, 15. What's that? 15 points.
Yeah.
No, 16. How many draws? Four draws.
Three draws.
Three draws.
15
points.
15.
Yeah. So I make it 13.
I've got beat Bournemouth, we draw at Newcastle, beat Burnley, lose at Chelsea. What was after Chelsea?
Forest home, Brentford home.
I've got draw with Forest, win against Brentford, Liverpool, 0 points, and draw at Luton, beat Sheffield United, lose at Arsenal. doesn't sound too unfathomable, does it? I mean,
no, it doesn't. Yeah. Really doesn't. I've got draws in the next two.
Me too. Yeah.
I've got a win against Burnley.
Yeah.
A win against Forest and a draw against Brentford.
What about Chelsea?
Nothing at Chelsea.
I think we'll get it. We might nick a draw there.
And I've got a draw against Luton and a win against Sheffield United. I'm pretty sure that made 13. So I've actually got three wins there, haven't I? Three wins and a bucket load of draws I've got. Three wins, four draws.
You got Luton. I'll take either of them, so you know yours. Definitely.
So I've got... I think we'll draw at Bournemouth. I think we'll draw at Newcastle. I think we'll beat Burnley. I think we'll... We might scrape... This is sounding very optimistic now. We'll draw at Chelsea. And then if we beat Forest, that's five games unbeaten. That's never going to happen. This is Everton. But hey, I mean, you know, I don't think we'll get anything against Liverpool. I think Brentford, I think we'll get something. My one concern out of them is actually Sheffield United, because they'll be on the beach by that point. And you know what happens when we play teams like that. Luton will probably get a draw away, and then Arsenal don't think we'll get anything. But I think we'll have enough.
Yeah, if all them kind of anything like them results you kind of said there, by the time we get to that Sheffield United game, it'd be pretty academic anyway. Yeah, imagine.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, we'd be on the
beach
too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, so
yeah, that'd be nice. Wouldn't that be nice?
Skagnet.
To be mentally checked out with two or three games to go. Oh, what a luxury.
The one that really scares me is Luton away still.
I just don't think we're going to lose three times in a season to Luton. We can't, surely. I mean, that would just be...
Well, we could. Again, this is Everton, but I don't... Yeah.
I mean.
Well, but the thing is, again, if these results have gone the way that we hope they will, we may not need to beat them down there anyway, you know? So, well, I don't know. Maybe that's a bit optimistic. Probably is the way we're playing, but... As I say, something's got to change.
So if you take your total that you got then... And you subtract the number of points that are going to be taken back from us. I'm going to say we're going to end up with 11 more points. If we lose two more, we'll have 11 more points, I reckon, by the end of the season. I mean, this is a bit random, but that would leave us on 36 from where we are now.
Yeah, I have 11 too, with 3 points deducted off 14, which I think, yeah... Yeah, mid-30s would almost certainly do it this season.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's say we get 10 more points then, even with the deduction. Let's just BB that bit, you know, you know, over the top of it, say, like, so 10 more points. What's that then? 35? Is that right?
Yeah.
You
just can't see Luton getting that many. Yeah, I mean, really, can you? If, you know, if we can get to 30, so we're saying if we get to 35 points, we're fine. Well,
yeah.
Maybe not even that many, but, you know.
Well, because as we've said, I mean, Luton... They're playing Spurs away, Arsenal away, but they've got Bournemouth at home, but then they go to City. And they've got to play Brentford. That's going to be an interesting one.
Brentford are an absolute free-fall.
Brentford are,
yes, they are.
Now, they've had Tony back for a while, but he's not pulling up trees right now. But they've got Brian and Mbeumo back, and I think that's going to be big for them. So they may, you know, they're in a similar situation to us, where you would think that at some point it's got to turn for them, just the law of averages, but they are in free fall. And, you know, there's a team every season that kind of does that, a bit like Leicester, where they shouldn't be down there, but they end up down there and then they just can't get out. So it's there for us. I keep saying it's in our hands again, which is all you can ask for, really.
And surely, like, just law of averages, we can't go that long without a win. Even if we're playing crap, there's got to be some win. You know what I mean? There's got to be something that's got to go for you at some point. Sure, it's just the way it works, isn't it? You know what I mean? So someone's got to go.
Forest have got to go to Spurs. They've got to come to Goodison. They've got Man City, Chelsea at home. But they have also got Burnley away, Sheffield United away. And the next two are Palace and Fulham at home. So I think Forest have not got a bad run in, really. I mean, you know, the bigger games or the better teams are at home, apart from the Spurs game.
Mm.
Don't know. I haven't looked at Brentford's run in because Brentford have just kind of taken everybody by surprise. But in fact, I will now. Brentford have got United and Brighton at home are their next two. Then they go to Villa.
Oof.
They've got a little run of having Sheffield United, Luton and us in back-to-back weeks. They finished the season at home to Newcastle. They've still got to go to Bournemouth. It's not them.
Yeah. Fulham are playing well now, though, so that's not a given. So, yeah. It's going to be interesting. Again.
What a shame.
Interesting times. May you live in them.
Hey, we should split this podcast into two, because that was a real sort of like, you know, angry rant of like 20 minutes. But it's actually been quite a really good sort of like, I don't want people to listen to this and go, bloody hell, them guys are crackers. And then it comes like, you know, it's actually quite a nice conversation. So, yeah.
That's funny.
It's like when you fall out with somebody close to you, isn't it? And then after about half an hour, you realize you do love them.
Well, it's almost absence making the heart grow fonder,
But then, like I said earlier, if we gain so many points not playing, I'm happy for us not to play another game this season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just share a funny story from the Man U game, which just as it occurred to me, you're all aware of Mr. Testicles, aren't you?
Of course.
Was I on that email?
So, if anyone not aware, if you just Google Mr. Testicles, you'll see it. Like, this is like a big mascot. Which
careful how you Google that, by the way.
Which ran onto the half time of a game at Goodison, came onto the pitch and they took some penalties or something. And basically, Mr. Testicles, it's for like testicular cancer awareness. So obviously, an important. It's something really important, but it's just basically a big yellow outfit. Like, it's just a big set of balls, basically. I was looking at the Everton mishmash, which we got up on the wall there with the son and Mr. Testicles had on it, and my son was like, "What's this? Who's the?" took some sort of explaining to it, like, and then like, but. Kind of way, you know, it's like a mascot. It's like, what's the name? It's like Mr. Testicles. I think he's got old enough to know what testicles are, thankfully. But and then I was at Man United, and Man U's Red Devil, like, mascot was on the pitch, like, at half time, saving penalties. He said, "Is that their Mr. Testicles?"
He's certainly a better mascot, that's for sure. Brilliant. All right, well, we'll leave it there for now. There's the chance that we may have the long promised Toffee Web quiz to we'll take advantage of this long break that we have after. Hopefully, do that if we can get everyone on a stable internet connection and in the same place at one time. But we'll see. But other than that. Let's enjoy the break, international break now, and then we'll be back at it in the week after. We play 3 games in a week, so it'll be interesting. But until then, Blues, take care, and as always, up the Toffees.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.